This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am really excited to be joined by our next guest. Joel Corey of CBS Sports is going to join us on the show. There are not too many people in the media that know and understand the NFL salary cap much more than our next guest. Really excited to discuss it and break down the Kansas City Chiefs. Joel, happy to have you join us on the show today, man. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Let's start with this. From a financial standpoint, what does it mean for Travis Kelce to come back to play for Kansas City? What would it mean for Kansas City if Travis Kelce decides that he is going to retire?
Well, the decision has to come maybe sooner than what he wanted his timetable to be, because the third day of the league year is March 14th, and he has an $11.5 million roster bonus due. Now, what they could do, I don't know if you guys remember, but there was this Green Bay quarterback who used to him and Haw play this retirement dance every year. And there was one year the Packers and Brett Favre moved to push it back the date of his roster bonus like four times in one year. So that could be done. Given that Kelce has $17.25 million in cash this year, has a $19.8 million cap hit, you'd save all the cash, enough is guaranteed, if he decides to retire. You'd be left with $2.55 million in dead money, but you would need to find a number one tight end unless they were confident that Noah Gray could assume that role. He signed a three-year extension for base value of $6 million per year, $18 million over 3 years, right before the regular season started.
So I'm looking at Travis Kelce's cap number for next year. It's at $19.8 million. Do you think the Chiefs are going to carry Kelce with that high of a cap hit? Or is there something that you can do for this upcoming season that obviously rewards him for the kind of player that he's been in his career? You pay him a certain amount of money and you get that cap number down to create some flexibility to add to the rest of your roster.
Well, since he's a year-to-year proposition, this is the last year of his deal. I'm not touching it. I'm not adding voiding dummy years, so I've got dead money next year. I'd rather keep him, leave it alone, have him play for the $17.25 million, and then he's off the books next year. If he wants to come back, then you got to negotiate a new deal for whatever that may be, given he is a declining player now. Granted, his down years are better than most tight ends' good years, but given he's a little long in the tooth, then I don't want to have residual cap charges in the future with him.
Right now, we're talking to Joel Corey, and we are going through some of the salary cap implications for the Kansas City Chiefs. I know this isn't a money thing, but more just what do you think? How do you think this plays itself out with Travis Kelce? I think he's going to play one more season. I think this is going to mirror what happened with his brother. After losing the Super Bowl to Kansas City, Jason came back for one more year, and that was his final year in the league. I think we're going to see the exact same pattern with Travis. I think he plays this upcoming season in the league, and I don't think that he renegotiates another deal. I think that 2025 would be the last season of Travis Kelce.
Yeah, I don't think I would want to go out on this note if I'm him. It'd be one thing if you lost a close game and he played well. That'd be maybe easier to accept than a blowout where you were a non-factor. So if I had to bet money, and I'm not going to bet on this, I would bet that he would come back.
So let's go through the Chiefs' decision. At least it's being reported that they're not going to use the franchise tag. Is that what you expected? Are you surprised by that? They've got a couple of free agents. We'll specifically go through their free agents and get your opinion on Nick Bolton and Trey Smith. But are you surprised that the Chiefs are deciding to not use the franchise tag?
No, not really, because the way the offensive line tag number works, it's not position specific. There's not a guard, center, and a tackle one. It's lumped together, which means it's basically a number based on left tackles. And you rarely see interior offensive linemen get the franchise tag. You did see that the Commanders in 20 and 2021 did use it 2 years in a row on Brandon Scherff. Before that, you had to go back to who was it? Logan Mankins in 2011 was one of the last guys to receive it. Joe Thuney in 2020 got it from the Patriots. But you really don't see offensive linemen getting franchise tags, particularly when that number doesn't really relate to the guard market. Because depending upon where the cap is ultimately set, the range for this number is going to be $23.259 million to $23.594 million. The highest paid guard for now is Landon Dickerson. He's got a deal which is 4 years, $84 million, averages $21 million per year. The max value of the deal is $87 million per year, $87 million total. I expect Trey Smith to become the highest paid guard in the league, whether it's with Kansas City or somebody else in free agency.
If you had to guess, do you think that contract comes from Kansas City or comes from someone else? They did pony up last year, and they spent big-time money on Chris Jones. But you know how this works. You can't pay everybody. Trey Smith is an interior offensive lineman. He's going to be the highest paid at his position. Do you think he's back in Kansas City next year?
Probably not. You guys had to make a choice on which guy from his draft class to sign. You paid Creed Humphrey, which you had to do. He's the best center in football. He's the highest paid center at $18 million per year. He reset the market. Now, the problem on your line is the mistake deal you made with Juwan Taylor. And that's the gift that keeps on giving, because 2025 is fully guaranteed. Signing him, making him, and putting him in the $20 million per year offensive lineman club when it didn't have a whole lot of members. When you signed him, that's turned out to be a bad deal. If I'm Trey Smith's agent, I'm looking at the fact that you brought in an outsider to play left guard when you signed him. Joe Thuney made him the highest paid guard at $16 million per year in 2021. So you're definitely going to have to make me the highest paid guard to stay here, but I suspect it's probably going to be someplace else.
Yeah, that's what I would guess as well. If you had to throw out a team or teams that make sense, we've heard a couple of different options. Chicago has been one that I've seen rumored.
Yeah, that's the one that makes the most sense to me, because what you really want to do with Caleb Williams is have a strong offensive line. They have a glaring need at guard and center.
Right now, we're talking to Joel Corey, going through some salary cap decisions for the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's move down the line. Let's talk about Nick Bolton. I never thought he was a option to be franchise tag, but could you see him back in Kansas City? He's a really difficult one, at least for me, to kind of wrap my arms around, because his market either you pay big time money for a guy, or those guys just kind of get 1 year, $8 million kind of deals. I'm not really sure how the league feels about Nick Bolton and what that contract looks like.
Yeah, outfall linebackers don't get franchised. The last time that happened was David Harris in 2011. If there's going to be an off-ball linebacker that would get that consideration, and the price tag is way too high, it would be Zach Bond, because that number is going to be over $25 million. It's going to be between $25.3 and $25.6. The highest paid off-ball linebacker is Roquan Smith at $20 million per year. That market has not moved very much. Bobby Wagner in 2018, the first ballot hall, future first ballot Hall of Famer, $18 million per year, basically 6 years ago. It's gone up $2 million since then. I don't see it going up with anybody this year. You've had some guys get in the $10, $11, $12 million per year range in free agency. I'd imagine Bolton has taken note of Patrick Queen last year. That was the highest paid off-ball linebacker, $41 million over 3 years ago to the Steelers. That's basically $13.7 a year. The most recent data point is Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah signing a 3-year extension with the Browns, $37.5 million over 3 years. Max is at $39 million, which had $20 million fully guaranteed at signing, $25 million overall guarantees. The thing with Kansas City is you got Drew Tranquil as one guy. You've got Leo Chenal waiting in the wings, so he could come in and become a full-time player if Bolton prices himself out of Kansas City. But it very well could be these guys are tricky. Sometimes they don't get paid, and if he's looking at the market falling out, the bottom falling out, maybe he comes back to Kansas City because he knows he can be successful here on a 1-year prove-it deal.
Yeah, that's kind of what I think could happen with Nick Bolton, exactly what you just said there at the end, that, you know, you try free agency, the market isn't what you thought it was going to be, but you can come back to Kansas City on a 1-year deal, a decent base salary with some incentives that you get a pretty sizable raise from you being a second round pick, but also you don't really break the bank, so to speak, and you stay in a defense that obviously you know very well and a system and scheme that you've had a lot of success in. I kind of think that's the best case scenario. I mean, putting the two players out there, it's far more likely that Bolton is back on next year's team than Trey Smith would be on next year's team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because if Trey Smith has at least two teams besides the Chiefs looking to re-sign him, you can kiss that goodbye because the agent's going to play those other two teams against each other. He'll keep Kansas City in the loop knowing that it's going to be too rich for their blood. But the interesting thing of Kansas City and offensive line, we'll get back to that for a second. Joe Tooney will be 33 in November, and 2025 is his contract year. He still worked the $16 million he's supposed to make at left guard. I think you don't want to move him back out to tackle full time. We saw that the Super Bowl didn't go all that well, and you basically weakened two positions. So that whole side of the line was a weakness for the Super Bowl. But you got a 33-year-old guy. You're not, if you extend him, you're starting to get to those years where he's going to be declining. So that's a dicey proposition as well, although he's playing well.
Right now, we're talking to Joel Corey, former sports agent. There is not too many people that understand the salary cap better than our guest, Joel Corey. Happy to have him join us on the show today. Let's get to a couple extensions for the Kansas City Chiefs. Joe Tooney is a prime candidate for this in the final year of his deal. I also would be very intrigued in trying to extend Trent McDuffie as well. He is now out of his third season. You can start to negotiate with him. He's one of the best young corners in the National Football League. That price only gets bigger. You can go ahead and reward him. Also start to kind of manipulate the cap to figure out how you want to build the rest of your roster. Those are two guys that seem prime for an extension in my mind.
As I said, I don't know if I want to do an extension for 33-year-old Tooney unless he's going to start taking less money than on the deal that got him to Kansas City, and I don't know if he'd be willing to do that given the guard market has significantly escalated since he was made the highest paid guard 4 years ago. Typically, when you have a Pro Bowl caliber player on a rookie contract, you try to extend them at the earliest possible instance. That'd be McDuffie's case. You did that with Eric Fisher years ago, the former first overall pick in the draft. The quarterback market grew a little bit last year, but good corners are harder to find than wide receivers, but wide receivers make a whole lot more money than corners, so there still needs to be a market correction. If I'm McDuffie, I can exercise a little bit of patience. I want to see if Sauce Gardner had a down year, gets a deal done, and I want to see if Stingley from the Texans gets a deal done. They'll go past the reigning defensive player of the year, Patrick Surtain II's $24 million per year. I want to let them move the needle, and then I want to come in and have those deals in the marketplace and capitalize on that if I'm Trent McDuffie.
A couple more questions here for Joel Corey, getting his thoughts on the Kansas City Chiefs. Joel, let's start with left tackle here from this perspective. DJ Humphreys, let's say you want to bring him back on a one-year deal. What would that one-year contract look for Humphreys?
Probably no more than what he was going to make this year with a whole bunch of incentives. There's a reason you didn't play him in the playoffs, so maybe he's not the injured older guy. If I'm going to take a flyer on an older guy, I might look at Tyron Smith, who's a better player, but getting him through 17 games, that's a dicey proposition. He's free. That might be one way to go. Maybe you draft a left tackle. You may have to move up to try to get in the position to get one, but you definitely got to find something at left tackle.
Yeah, I'm with you at left tackle. The Chiefs usually take a big swing. Ronnie Stanley is out there. Dan Moore Jr., who played for the Pittsburgh Steelers, he's an option. But if they're going to go that veteran route, Tyron Smith makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, if you're talking that cheap guy incentive-laden contract, because that's what he did that last year in Dallas, took a pay cut, had a ton of incentives in there. This year, I think the base value was like six, could have made up to 20, didn't make any of the incentives. Because he didn't get through the season. So you'd have to have a plan B with him, knowing that he may not get through the whole season. That's why you may not want to go that route. Ronnie Stanley finally played every game in a season for the first time in his career. He's not quite what he was when he signed his big deal, which made him the second highest paid tackle in 2020. But he's still pretty damn good and still young enough to get paid. Tyler Decker signed for over $20 million per year, who's, I think, when Stanley's healthy, isn't quite him. So you're north of $20 million per year with Ronnie Stanley, so I don't think that really would work for the Chiefs.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you here to wrap this thing up is, do you think they could even take on a contract like that? When you think of the things that they have to pay for coming up, when you think of the free agents that they have in this class, you mentioned at right tackle and paying Juwan Taylor and how you think that contract has been a mistake. Do you think they can have Juwan Taylor? They've already paid Creed Humphrey.
Ain't no thanks to that. He's a penalty waiting to happen.
No, you ain't lying there. I just was wondering if they can have Juwan Taylor at that salary and they could have somebody like Ronnie Stanley on the left side. That's a lot of money invested in tackle.
Well, Taylor's only one more year because he's gone after. Unless he turns into the second coming of Penei Sewell, he's not around in 2026. So theoretically, yes, you'd have to go the old, like, Jeremy Maclin, Dwayne Bowe, modest first-year cap number, ballooning second-year cap number. Well, you've always got your break glass in case of emergency restructure of Patrick Mahomes, who does have a $66.25 million cap hit, which is third in the league. It's just about a matter of how much of that you want to kick the can down the road and lower the cap number. And you've got Chris Jones, who's got the second highest paid defensive cap number, $34.85 million. Those are two safe guys if you want to kick the can down the road and then try to create room to accommodate like a Ronnie Stanley or someone like that.
That is Joel Corey joining us on the show today to give us his thoughts on the Chiefs salary cap. Always great information about what the Chiefs could possibly be doing. Joel, we hope to have you on once moves actually start happening to figure out what it means for the Chiefs and the rest of the league. We appreciate your time today. Thanks for popping on today.
All right, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That's Joel Corey joining us on the show today. Always very detailed information about the salary cap and what it means for the Chiefs. I thought what he said there at the end, Rob, was pretty interesting about left tackle and what the Chiefs could do. You always have the Patrick Mahomes contract break in case of emergency. It is designed in a way that you can always pull from the bank of Patrick Mahomes and move some money around from his deal to make sure that you go get what you need. If the Chiefs want to take the biggest swing possible at the position, it is obvious to me that that is Ronnie Stanley. If you right now have the stance that left tackle is by far and away their biggest need, you don't care about the money, you want the best one that's available, and you will figure out how to pay for it later, then Ronnie Stanley is the best option. There is the high-end option. I would say there is the mid-tier option, and there are a couple of those. Cam Robinson, I think, is going to be a decent mid-tier option at left tackle. If you want the low end, that's Tyron Smith. I would say that that's DJ Humphreys, or you have the opportunity to always go in the draft and you're going to get the cheapest of all of these options. But with where you pick, you're going to either have to move up in the NFL draft to get exactly what you want, or you're going to have to hope that you hit on a second round pick or later at a very, very important position of need for your team.
It is interesting, though. He didn't phrase it as borrowing from the bank of Mahomes. He said it's a safe decision to kick that can down the road. He also mentioned Chris Jones kicking that can down the road. I don't think Chris Jones really is a safe decision to kick the can down the road based on his age. I understand if you are a left tackle or bust person, why you would say maneuver around, get the bank of Patrick Mahomes, and get left tackle done. I think it's also worth noting Joel Corey said Trey Smith ain't coming back and Joe Tooney's restructure is problematic because it's going to start at $16 million and he's 33 years old, which is what he's owed. So this offseason, the Chiefs have massive, massive questions. And this is Joel Corey talking. He did not seem like he was a fan of the Juwan Taylor contract, which at least for another year, you got to kind of eat it there. So, and Creed Humphreys is the highest paid center. So I am not a left tackle or bust person, but if you are a left tackle or bust person, part of that bust includes extending a 33-year-old left guard and losing your top flight right guard. So there is no perfect answer. I don't love DJ Humphreys. I'd be team Ronnie Stanley, but I'm also team don't pay guards. So maybe I just fall into a different category than most fans.
I mean, I would say that if you were on the side, and a lot of you were on this side, that you were going to protect Patrick Mahomes at any cost, that's what it costs to protect him with Juwan Taylor. Now, I do think that you've missed on it. And because you want to protect your quarterback so much, you have signed yourself into a bad contract with Juwan Taylor. Did you guys know that Juwan Taylor's contract, right tackle over there for the Chiefs, Juwan Taylor, his cap hit is 10% of the salary cap for next season. 10%. Rob, his salary cap is $27.3 million next year for the Kansas City Chiefs. You have a very high base salary for him. You have prorated the signing bonus. You reached a restructure with him. His contract, as smart as the Patrick Mahomes deal is, it is equally as bad what they got Juwan Taylor at right now. So I would say with Juwan, some of you might be frustrated. Hey, we don't want him anymore. We don't want him anymore. You don't have a choice for this upcoming season. There's nothing you can do. I'm done moving money around for Juwan Taylor's deal. You got one more year left on Juwan Taylor's contract. I know it looks like a four-year, $80 million deal. It doesn't have to be. You can make it a three-year, $60 million deal. You can cut Juwan Taylor at the end of this upcoming season, and you will save $20 million by getting him off the team. You got to just tread water this one more year with that deal. Don't talk to me about Pro Football Focus. I watch the games. The Juwan Taylor contract is bad. The Juwan Taylor contract does limit you from other things that you want to do. You can carry a bad contract or two. You don't have to hit and get maximum value on every single one of these deals. But I do think you have to realize that, man, part of why they're not going to be able to do what they want to do is you're paying Juwan Taylor a lot of money to be all right over there. And there's not any flexibility with this deal. You have run out of the flexibility with Juwan Taylor's contract. So I'm with him on Trey Smith. I just, from a number standpoint, the math doesn't really work for Trey Smith. And I think the best case scenario with Nick Bolton is you let Nick Bolton go see the market for himself. The market doesn't come together the way he thinks it's going to come together. You got a choice now. You can sign a one-year deal in Kansas City and continue to be in a system that you really like. You like the coaching staff. You like the team. You win. You play at a high level. You can sign that deal, or you just go play somewhere else. I mean, that's happened before. Willie Gay, he signed a one-year, $3 million deal. He went to go play for the New Orleans Saints. He's about to hit free agency again. So maybe Nick Bolton comes back next year, but I mean, some of it is position. Some of it is the money. It is far more likely that Bolton is on the team next year than Trey Smith. It's going to be really, really hard to keep Trey Smith on the team, just from a financial standpoint. You just heard what Joel Corey had to say. There's going to be a legitimate bidding war for Trey Smith. If I'm Trey Smith's agent, I'm telling him, at least see the offers. Let me go to the combine. Let me make some phone calls. This is why you give me 4% of your contract, is to go out there and get you the best deal. We can get you not just a deal from Kansas City. We can get you a Carolina, a Commanders, a Chicago. Now, I know you want to go win, but you also want to sign this deal to set up you and the rest of your family, and that's why you hired me to be your agent. So I think it's going to be really, really difficult. I think it's going to be very, very difficult to keep Trey Smith in Kansas City. All right, coming up on the other side, you know what I love? I love a really good idea. And hockey had a great idea with this Four Nations tournament that they have going on. They have a championship game coming up later today. If it is a compelling game in the third period, I think the numbers are going to reflect that a lot of people were interested in this event. There is also another good idea that is happening that no one knows about. Well, why not expand it? I'll tell you what it is. Keep it right here, Mr. Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5. The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Welcome back into The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very excited to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Thursday. I never want to stand in the way of what I would deem to be great ideas. The Four Nations is a great idea. At one point, somebody sat there and said, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't do a traditional all-star game. And one of the beauties of our sport is people play it around the world. So what if we got players from the United States and players from Canada and players from a couple of other countries? And why don't we do that instead of an all-star game? And you know what? Somebody was like, you know what? That actually makes a lot of sense. Maybe we should do that. It works for me. Great. Let's try it. And it's worked. It was a big success. We need more of those kind of ideas. Somebody had the idea. Hey, you know what? We have a lot of hockey games. What if we took some of these hockey games and instead of playing them in the same old boring arenas that we've been playing in, what if we played them outside at cool places? What if we took this same hockey idea and we put this inside Yankee Stadium? Would that be cool? Somebody was like, yeah, that would be cool. I mean, they've played these things at Lake Tahoe. They've played these things at Fenway Park, Yankee Stadium. That is a great idea. You know what we need more? Great regular season ideas. The NBA has a great regular season idea. It's just time for them to expand it. Did you guys know that the Suns and the Spurs are playing a basketball game? And you would think, well, obviously, they're the most in the Western Conference. I'm sure it's going to be in Phoenix or San Antonio. No, no, no. It is not. It was at Austin, Texas, where Kevin Durant went to college. Wait, an idea went off. Instead of creating these nonsense tournaments that no one feels a connection to, what if we did this? Listen to this idea. You know how in college football they have rivalry week where all the rivals play on one week of the season? It's great. We just saw it this past year. It was fights and people throwing flags and it was amazing. It was great. You know how in college basketball they have feast week? Feast week is great. Right before Thanksgiving, you get some of the best college basketball that the sport has to offer. Teams just matched up against each other. Every time you go home, you know you're going to get a great matchup. Gonzaga, Illinois. Then you got KU against Duke. It's phenomenal. Feast week. What if the NBA decided to do this? What if they decided to have a week and they called it, I don't know, Big Man Campus on week. And you have players go back to their alma mater and play games at their stadium. And you promote it. Hey, this week, we're not playing in NBA arenas. Every team in the NBA is going to play a game at a college venue. So you get Anthony Edwards, who went to Georgia. You have him go back and he plays a game in front of his home fans. You get Kevin Durant to go back and play a game in front of their home fans. You get Chris Paul to play a game at Wake Forest in his final year. You see where this thing is heading. If your teams, you need to figure out a way to make your regular season feel more special. The NFL doesn't really have to do those gimmicks. People are invested in the NFL regular season. The NFL has connected in a way that you hate to miss a regular season game. No one hates to miss regular season hockey games, basketball games, or they don't. So you got to give them a reason to watch in. When baseball does the Field of Dream games, people tune in and watch it because it's cool. When they did the Negro Leagues game this past season, it was cool. People watched it. They wanted to be a part of it. Why can't you do the same thing with basketball? You have some of the most iconic venues in America. Use them. You're telling me the Pacers can't play one game in Hinkle Fieldhouse where Hoosiers was set? You're telling me that you can't figure out a way to get how many Duke? You're telling me that you can't put the Dallas Mavericks with Kyrie Irving? You can't put him for one game back at Cameron Indoor Stadium and tell some cool stories and Kyrie gets to play in front of the home fans for one more time? That you wouldn't be interested to see what it looks like? There's an idea here with the NBA, and I'm giving them an idea for free. My main focus with the NBA is just going to be, it's just going to be very simple. Get the main thing back to being the main thing. That's it. And if your argument is many of the best NBA players don't go to colleges, yeah, some of them, a large majority of them still do. I mean, Joel Embiid went to college, right? He went to Kansas. Kevin Durant went to college, right? He went to a school. Steph Curry went to a college. Anthony Edwards went to a school. Jalen Brunson went to a college. Sure. There's like seven players in the league that this doesn't fit for. Like seven of them. Yeah, you're right. You can't do this with Luka Doncic. You can do this with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's about to win NBA MVP. You can do this with Jason Tatum. He went to college. So yes, you can do this idea. 1 week in the NBA, you guys got nothing but free time. Pick a week. Pick it in March, right before the NCAA tournament. They're not using the stadiums. They're in conference play. Hey, we're gonna celebrate our sport and the connection between college basketball. We're gonna have LeBron play a game at Ohio State and have him go back to Ohio and play a game in front of his fans. This would be a phenomenal idea. The NBA, think about it.
I think the idea is good by the NBA, but when you told me earlier today, you asked me, hey, do you know where the Suns and Spurs game is being played? I didn't know. This is a good idea by the NBA. Why are they not advertising it better? Why am I not flooded on my social media and on television with, hey, Kevin Durant returns to Austin tonight, Spurs and Suns? Like, we crush baseball for being bad at marketing, but you know what? Everyone who is in the sports sphere knew about the Field of Dreams game. Who was playing, when it was, what time, what channel. I am a casual NBA fan. I'm not as hardcore as you or maybe some others. I had no idea that Suns and Spurs were in Austin tonight. How? How have they not supported this idea if it's that good?
You want to know what I think happened is? I think the hockey thing took off. You can't promote both today. You can't promote both today. I think that's what happened. I think the hockey thing is a much bigger deal than they had anticipated it being. They got 4.5 million people on Saturday that watched it. That's more people than have watched a college basketball game this year, watched a exhibition hockey game on Saturday night. So I think all of the sports marketing push has been, hey, let's push people in this direction. And you're also not going to have Victor Wembanyama playing that game now. He's out for the rest of the season, which in pretty NBA fashion, they had a cool idea, and yet one of the stars is not going to play in the idea. And it just kind of got, but I'm with you. I agree with you at the core. You have a phenomenal idea. Push it, promote it, expand it. You're looking for ways to spice up the regular season. This is the way to spice it up. It'd be cool to see the Mavericks play the Raptors at Cameron Indoor Stadium. Let college kids come in. Create a student section. It'd be fun. People would watch it. People would be engaged in your regular season games. Just think about it.
I like the NFL to do this for preseason games. We all know season ticket holders hate the preseason games. They get slapped with them. We hate the preseason games. They serve no purpose. You know what's better than watching one quarter of Patrick Mahomes at Arrowhead play against the Lions? Play that game in Lubbock. You know what they would do? They would sell out. They would sell out to watch Patrick Mahomes play one quarter of football.
Sure. I agree.
Like, this is a good idea that I hope other sports emulate, but since no one knows it's even happening, I doubt other sports are going to follow suit. And the NFL treats its preseason games like they matter when they don't.
Well,
but this should be something the NFL's doing,
too. Yeah, I'm with you. We'll obviously see what happens. The game's going to be on TNT, so we'll see what happens today. You know, inside the NBA, they'll be there, all of that stuff. So we'll see what happens. But I'm with you. The NBA, a problem that they have right now is just marketing and push, which just doesn't really make any sense just given the nature of basketball. But I don't know. I was like, wait, that game's in Austin? Like, why don't they do this more often? It just didn't really make...
Do you think they'll pause the game to honor inside the NBA again? Or was that unique to the All-Star game?
No, I don't think that's going to be the plan. I don't think they're going to pause the game to do that. Coming up on the other side, if you missed it, Diana Rossini is reporting that Travis Kelce is leaning towards coming back. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
This man was a bona fide scrub.
On 96.5 The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, coming up at the top of the hour, we'll be joined by Tom Hart. He is with SEC Network. He covers the Missouri Tigers. Missouri gets their third top five win of the season. They wire to wire, really played well yesterday and beat Alabama. A lot of people think that Alabama can be a one seed in the NCAA tournament. Missouri also beat Florida earlier this year. Florida is also a team that people believe can be a one seed. Diana Rossini of The Athletic, she was on the Rich Eisen show earlier today, and she believes, at least she is reporting, that Kelce is leaning towards coming back.
You know, I can tell you from just having a few conversations with people around the league over the last few days, there's definitely a sense that Travis is going to try to play more. I haven't heard anyone say, yeah, he's really struggling with what he wants to do. It's definitely leaning more towards that. That can, of course, change. This is going to be his decision only. But for this Chiefs operation looking to move forward here, I think they feel pretty good that Travis has got a little bit more left in him.
That is Diana Rossini of The Athletic and her reporting that Travis Kelce is leaning towards coming back. I also believe that Travis Kelce is going to come back. I think we'll find out in the next 10 days or so that Travis Kelce has made a decision on what he wants to do, and I believe he is going to play next season and his final season for the Chiefs. We had Matt Verderam on discuss this, and here's what he says he believes is the future for the Chiefs Hall of Fame tight end.
I think he's going to play one more year. I think he's going to come back and play one more year. I think that it becomes delicate, though, for the Chiefs in this regard. Look, he is still a good football player. He made the Pro Bowl this year, and it wasn't one of these, like, charity. He deserved to make it. He was, other than Brock Bowers, the second-best tight end in the AFC. By the same token, he physically is a shell of who he was 2 years ago. They need to start running this offense through Xavier Worthy, who is, all that Super Bowl is a massive bright spot. They need to run it through Rashee Rice when he gets back from what might be a suspension or certainly just his injury. Kelce needs to be a third option, a fourth option in this passing game, where they can go, hey, Travis, listen, we're going to give you half the first team reps during the week. I know he likes to practice every rep. That can't be his choice anymore. They've got to keep him fresh. Instead, you know, he averages for his career about 135 targets per season. That number's got to be like 90. You know, like it's got to be, you know, maybe even a little lower than that. Like they've got to start putting him in bubble wrap. And, you know, look, the Pats and the Bucks did that with Gronk the last handful of years of his career. Like there's no shame in that.
That was Matt Verderam when we asked him about Travis Kelce and what he believes his future to be. I've told you guys that if Kelce wants to keep playing football for the Chiefs, it would make a lot of sense to me. The only thing I would say for Kelce is you just have to assume that you're going to be a role player for the Chiefs. If you're coming in a basketball analogy, to knock down a couple of threes and play defense, I believe the Chiefs should be happy to have you come back. But if you were expecting anything more than that, I don't know, man. I don't know if that is going to work out. Just because I don't think you are that player anymore, I don't think it really makes a lot of sense for the Chiefs to kind of highlight you as that player. So let's talk about this for a little bit, and we'll get to some college basketball here coming up in a little bit with Tom Hart. But Rob Manfred is doing the rounds Baseball season is about to start. There actually is a spring training game that starts today. Royal spring training starts tomorrow, so baseball is in the air. A lot of people are upset at the amount of money that the Los Angeles Dodgers spent this offseason. They spent a lot of money this offseason. The Los Angeles Dodgers spent $445 million in baseball contracts. That's not counting what they've already given Shohei Ohtani. That's not counting any of the other money that they've already committed to players. That is simply what they have committed just this offseason on talent. The two teams that have the highest payroll in Major League Baseball, the Mets, have $321 million. The Dodgers have $313 million. That is at the top. You go all the way down to the bottom of the screen. The Miami Marlins spend $47 million. The average payroll in baseball is $150 million. You were telling me that the team that is at number one, as opposed to what the average is, the median in baseball, is twice the amount. The Royals, they spend $117 million. The Mets spend $200 million more on their team and payroll and salary than the Royals. How is this a system that works for anybody? This is what confuses me the most about it is, yes, there are big market teams in baseball, the same way that there are in any sport that we follow. But it's way more small cities than big cities. How is this system working for you if you're Baltimore or Minnesota or Kansas City or Cincinnati or Milwaukee? Why haven't you guys teamed up? Why haven't you guys come together as a voting bloc and said, we're not doing this anymore? This system is not good for us. The NFL works because the rules are fair for everybody. It doesn't matter if you're in Kansas City or Green Bay or Jacksonville, you have the same opportunities to win as Los Angeles and New York. Now, that doesn't mean that you will win. It comes to other things. Luck, roster management, draft, talent evaluation. You still have to put the work in, but everybody is on the same playing field. Everybody's not on the same playing field in Major League Baseball. And this is the system that everybody has just signed up for and everybody's just fine with. So you're fine with the fact that a player can hit free agency and you have no chance to sign him? That's not the case in the NBA. Every team can sign every player in the league. Now, the player has a choice, but every team can sign every player. In football, every team can sign every player. You don't hear a situation in which Josh Allen's contract is coming up and you're thinking, well, he can't sign there. It's in Buffalo. No, he can sign in Buffalo. They can financially pay him. What are we doing here? How are we signed up for a system that if you're the Royals and you draft Aaron Judge, at some point you know you're not going to be able to keep him? That's not a viable way of team distribution. So obviously people are asking the commissioner, we're mad about this. What are you doing about this? Here's what he said.
The Dodgers have gone out and done everything possible, always within the rules that currently exist, to put the best possible team on the field. And I think that's a great thing for the game. That type of competitive spirit is what people want to see. By the same token, I said this at the owners' meetings, I'll say it again. It's clear that we have fans in some markets that are concerned about the ability of the team in their market to compete with the financial resources of the Dodgers. And I think if we've been consistent on one point, it is we try to listen to our fans on topics like this. And I have heard people on this, believe me. I get a lot of emails about it.
No one is saying that the Dodgers are circumventing the rules. We're saying that you need to change the rules. You need what football has. You need a salary cap ceiling. You also need a salary cap floor. That's what you need. Look at the NBA. The NBA, very viable in small markets. This maybe was a complaint 10, 20 years ago about the league, but through collective bargaining, the best team in the NBA is in Oklahoma City. Milwaukee has won a championship in the NBA. Denver has won a championship. Toronto has won a championship. Everybody's viable. Now, again, you got to put the work in. if you're the Charlotte Hornets, yeah, you got to draft well. You got to develop well. You got to make some big trades. But we've seen a dynasty in San Antonio in the NBA. They have made it where small markets can be pretty viable. There's been one small market team that has won a championship in 50 years of Major League Baseball. One team. It's a league in which you can draft Bryce Harper with the number one overall pick, and you can start to count the days when he's going to go play for somebody else. You have no chance of keeping him on your roster. I don't think that's a great system of how you guys are doing things. The top needs to give up a little bit of power. The bottom needs to do a lot more. Spending $47 million on your payroll is embarrassing if you're the Marlins. It's embarrassing. It cannot be worse than what that is. You have to do better if you're the Miami Marlins. Coming up at the top of the hour, let's talk some college basketball. Tom Hart joins us on the show. He's a Mizzou alum. He also works for SEC Network. The Tigers are one of the 10 best teams in college basketball. Keep it right here, so drive.